You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is one of my favorite astrologers, Carl Boudreau. Carl was raised as an observant Catholic and got an undergraduate degree in the history of religions from Brown University. His experience of spirit did not fit neatly into any of the traditional religions, and he found his way into esoteric literature and Eastern religions after graduating. A little later in life, he earned a doctorate in history from the University of Iowa. He found himself strongly drawn to the practice of astrology, which brought together all of his learning, life experience, and spiritual aspirations into a single unifying practice. Astrology is a universal language which has enabled him to communicate with many people from around the world. It also allows him to understand and to be of service to others. You can find Carl on Facebook. So let's welcome him to the show now. Hi, Carl. How are you?
Hello, Lance. How are you doing? Am I coming through okay now?
Yes, we're fine. We're absolutely fine,
okay,
and we're live on the air. One of the first times I read one of your astrology reports, I was literally blown away by the details, and it was the first time I had ever seen anybody point out the various points in the astrology chart as a three-dimensional object. And so I think the first one I read, or I heard, you, because you were doing them on video, it was a cube. And I thought, oh my God, of course. These are not just lines going from place to place. These are, you know, geometrical relationships. So from then on, I listened to every one of your shows and loved every one of them.
Thank you.
So now I know everybody will be wanting to know, since the 2012 didn't turn out quite like we had thought it might, and here we are in 2014, and it seems as if, you know, things have escalated with wars and rumors of war, you know, destructive forces that are trying to, or vying with each other to take over the world. Let's just start off by saying, you know, asking you what you see from an astrology standpoint.
Well, if we go back to the 2012 chart, I'm using my memory here. I don't have it in front of me. I think of these things as, say, a detonation in nine dimensions. So that you had a detonation, a cosmic energetic detonation involving a tremendous amount of Uranus in 2012, but it is happening in a lot of dimensions. And the energy started flowing out and trickling through the processes, the layers, the various levels of being and so on. And I believe that it has been effective. I think that the explosive force of the 2012 chart really reached the 3D, the physical plane, the one we live on, very, very, very slowly. And I really still see what we're going through as an extension of the 2012 thing. But I have to say it was a couple of years ago, and I've been on to other things. Now, you know, maybe it would help if I gave a little background. I've done a video on this, but I don't think it got as much attention as some of the other things I've done. That there was an astrological structure in the heavens that started coming into effect in the early 1970s, and it really strongly empowered the 1%. You could not have designed an astro... If you've sat down with a committee of astrologers and tried to design a set of structures or aspects that would favor the 1%, you could not have come up with anything better than what the planets did on their own. Mm. And from about that period on, there was a concentration of power in the upper levels of society, economically, politically, and otherwise. That structure began to fade in the early zero zeros, and when Uranus went into Aries, I believe that was 2010, if there might be people out there who could correct me on that, but it was toward the end of the zero zeros there, Uranus definitively broke up that structure. Now, you have 40 years going from 1970 to 2010 in which a small, heavily empowered, deeply empowered group of people were able to stack the deck. They were able to build structures. They were able to buy influence. They were able to accumulate resources and exercise power. And they shaped a system and guided events in a way that was entirely to their benefit. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just describing the kind of thing that I think happened.
Clearly that has happened.
Okay. Now, if you've got something that a small group of very, very powerful people spent 40 years building, and you have that begin to crumble in 2010, that's not going to disappear overnight. It's going to take its sweet time disappearing. Now, the other thing is, you would not want that to crumble overnight because it was a very distorted structure. It was a maldistribution of money, power, wealth, resources, but it was the order that we had. And if the planet suggests, okay, that's done, boom, we're pulling the struts out from under that, it's going to collapse, well, if it was the only order you had, as unfair as it was, you would have descended into chaos. And I really don't think the planets, at least not at this phase in our history, the planets are not dealing with these catastrophic, cataclysmic changes. I don't think you go from zero to 60. I think the planets begin to change. You get transitions within transitions, phases within phases, and I think you can see that there has been an awakening. Now, it's not as fast, as drastic, or as dramatic that a lot of us would like to see, but it's actually happening. I mean, the problem of the 1% versus the 99% has been clearly defined in the public mind. It has been, as the academics would say, it has been problematized. People have started looking at it and saying, oh, this is not good. How did it get this way? How do we get out of it? What do we do? And so you have a process that I think I would date because I don't remember the details, but I remember tracking this very closely and counting the milestones, counting the various, the elections, the economic cycles, and so on. I tracked headlines in the newspapers looking for some sign that the sense of re-empowerment, the drive to re-empower themselves, was awakening among the 99%. And I don't see how anybody, in fairness, can say that that has not been going on. Mm. Once again, it's not as fast as a lot of people would like to see, but history, in my experience, and I think in your experience, it doesn't work fast. Now, let me give you an example that helps us gain some perspective on historical process. Go back to 1925. Mm. The 1% was riding high. The working guy was flat on his butt. He had no power. 20, 30 years later, the unions, I don't want to stir up any controversy here, but basically that had turned around. The unions are running the damn country. Okay, so in 1955, 1960, the unions had the upper hand. You couldn't do anything without dealing with the unions in this country. Now, I'm simply stating a fact here. I'm not trying to stir up any political stuff. All right. In 1925, if you had been here in 1925, would you have believed that the unions could have turned that entire thing upside down, could have turned the social economic pyramid on its head from 1925 to, say, 1945 or 1950? So, and then you're sitting in 1950, 1955. Could you imagine that by 1990, the unions would have wouldn't set back on their heels, that all of that power would have been undone? So when you look at it that way, you see that history has a way of surprising us. It's like watching the grass grow or the paint dry. Nothing seems to be happening, or maybe a little bit seems to be happening, but those tiny little increments over a long period of time add up to a very huge difference, and they can undo things that seem like they could never be undone. And we've seen the power distribution flip from right to left, from union to management. Now, what's happening now, in, I'd say, the way the planets are moving now, one, you see that same slow incremental movement sitting there in 2010 with all this money and all this power concentrated in so few hands and nobody really caring about it. You know, it happened. That's the way it was. People said, okay, that's the way it is. Woe is us. Too bad.
Right. Well,
now, that's the way you would have felt about the unions and the working class in 1925. So you had a similar situation in 2010. But if you take the astrological force that is being exerted incrementally over a long period of time, you give that 10 or 15 or 20 years, and guess what? You could have a very different distribution of power. The 99% could be playing defense, and they probably will, excuse me, the 1% is very likely to be playing defense increasingly in the next decades. Now, once again, it took the unions, what it looks like it happened really fast if you go from 25 to the end of World War II and so on. It seems very fast looking back on it. But if you were living through it from no paycheck to no paycheck or little paycheck to little paycheck, it seemed like it was dragging on forever, that we'd never see economic justice. But in fact, we did get it. Now, we're sitting here in 2014, about to go into 2015, and we're thinking, oh my God, we're never going to get out from under the oligarchs. The Koch brothers are going to be riding high forever. And I say, well, no. What do you expect? Do you expect us to go from a virtual oligarchy in the world, a global oligarchy in, say, 2009 to a democratic paradise in 2014? Well, it really doesn't kind of work that way. Now, the way I see the planets, though, perhaps I've set us up to, with the, how can I put it? I've set up the wrong expectation here. I think a lot of people would say, okay, the 99% are going to take over and they're going to lord it over the 1%. But the way the planets appear to be moving now, and I looked at this pattern, the one that was in force between the early 1970s and 2010, I projected that, well, 60, 70 years in use ahead, and you do see that the planetary power that so heavily, massively, exclusively backed the 1% in the last 40 years, well, it's not just going to flip and suddenly start backing the 99%. The way the planets appear to be moving, we're going to get a more equitable distribution of power and resources. So it's not going to be a pendular swing from all the way from the right all the way to the left. The pendulum is going to swing more slowly and more gradually and within a narrower range. We're going to see kind of a normal oscillation between the power on the left, power on the right, power at the top, power at the bottom. It's not going to be as extreme as we saw in the 20th century. But if you're looking for that extreme, you're not going to see that. If you're looking for an overnight transformation, you're not going to see that. I don't think history repeats itself the way some people say it does. I think certain facets of history repeat themselves. But I we're not going to live under pharaohs as we did how many thousands of years ago. The Roman emperors are not coming back. The 20th century dictators are not coming back. That there has been a kind of progress. There have been a lot of setbacks, but we've never seen a complete repetition of the previous era, and the democratic forces have been set back on their heels. And we've seen these massive world wars fought, and a lot of what was going on was democracy against tyranny. Well, the fact is, democracy did well for itself. Democracy defended itself, and they defended itself themselves. Democracy defended itself very, very effectively. So, let's get this back to the original question of 2012. If you have this detonation of Uranian energy that took place at some level, at some high level, and the energy started filtering outward from the inner planes to the outer planes and began expressing itself in our lives a little bit at a time. One person spoke up here on one day, another person spoke up there on another day. The SEIU started organizing the fast food workers, and we had a timid little sit-down strike against McDonald's on one Thursday in 1 week, but you had more and more of those strikes. So we've got to get back to the idea of incrementality, of a gradual change. And I think you do see this incremental change, and I think you see a kind of change that over time, well, think about it. If we see this kind of thing going on in 2010, 2011, 2012, can you imagine what we'll see after 10 years of that? You'll see an incremental kind of improvement or an incremental resetting of the balance of power and economic and political power in the world. But it's not going to happen overnight. Now, there's another thing that another astrological fact that I could throw out there. If you look at the United States chart, and you look at the sixth house of labor, I believe I'm working from memory here, but Taurus is in the sixth house, so that the U.S. labor movement is governed by Taurus. Now, where is Uranus now, the planet of revolution and reform and self-assertion? Well, it's in Aries. Where is it going to be in a few years, five or six years? It's going to be in Taurus in the American sixth house. So an astrologer would say, okay, the American labor movement has been beaten back. They're the ones that largely speak for the 99%, and they're just beginning to come back to life. They're beginning to show signs of life. Well, in a few years, when Uranus gets into the American sixth house in Taurus, the house of the American labor movement, I'm willing to bet you that by then you will see a resurgence of labor, a resurgence of the labor movement. Now, I know that's going to sound catastrophic to some people, like a catastrophic, disastrous development to some people, and other people are going to see it as the arrival of utopia. They're going to see it as the beginning of a wonderful new era. But I'd like to get away from that kind of political extreme and go back to the astrological basics and say that Uranus is going to move into the American sixth house, into Taurus, and when it does, life, the power of the initiative will move back into the American labor movement. That would be my prediction based on pretty basic astrology. So I guess to keep all this in perspective, we're talking about a movement, a resetting of the balance, a re-empowerment of the 99%, but not a massive flip-flop from the 1% to the 99%. I think we're seeing a planetary arrangement that will eventually bring a more equitable, rational balance between the various sectors of society, between the various strata of society. Now, the reality is I don't know who will agree with me, but I know this is going to seem like a radical point of view, but management and labor really kind of need each other, because the guy who does the heavy lifting, who comes in every day and keeps the widgets coming off the assembly line, you know, they don't have the skills of the engineers and the lawyers and all those people. You have a division of labor, and you need the cooperation of the people at the top, on the top of the administrative chain. You need an administration. Now, I'm not saying that the little guy shouldn't have his unions and negotiate with the administration, but you really need both. And if you have power switching from the 99% and then back to the 1%, then back to the 99%, well, that's not going to do you any good. You're going to go from one extreme to the other. You'll end up with a tyranny of the working guys, and after a while, you'll switch that off. You have a tyranny of the rich, wealthy, powerful guys. You want a balance. And my reading of the stars is that they've shown us, I'd say in the last 100, 200 years, they've shown us what happens if you have these massive radical power shifts from the lower echelons of society to the top and back again. You get these terribly destructive swings of power.
Well, Carl, if I were in the 1%, if I were involved with it and looking at technology and the advances that we've seen and the ones that we're not aware of that are being held in private hands, I would simply replace the 99% in the labor unions with robotics.
Well, you know, you can say that, but that's true. I think that you are oversimplifying historical process, because let's put it this way. We're talking more about stakeholders. If you forget that you're talking about laborers, talk about stakeholders. And the average American who gets married, has his kids, and gets a mortgage and builds a life for himself, I don't think you should think of him necessarily as a widget maker. You should think of him as somebody who contributes something to society. And somebody has to decide whether or not he gets his fair share. Now, if the guys who own all the plants, the administration says, well, we own this, we can do what we want, we get all the profits, we can shape this any way we want, and we choose to shape it so that we get the lion's share of everything all the time. But then you have a Congress that can say, no, we've got to think in terms of shareholders. Or we've got to take remember Buckminster Fuller, other visionary people back in the 20th century said, well, you know, we can have machines doing a lot of this stuff, that we really don't need to have people working on these jobs. But that's not the same thing as saying that everybody who has these jobs is going to be kicked to the gutter. What you're going to say is the people who have these jobs are shareholders. They have contributed something. They have potential. So instead of thinking of them as disposable employees, we think of them as shareholders, as human potential. Who were they given a little bit of money and a little bit of time off? And I think this was actually suggested. Let these guys go out and invent things. Let them build little businesses. Let them tinker in their garages. Let them go to school and take courses. And they would eventually come up with wealth-producing, value-adding stuff. So I think that you get kind of apocalyptic when you talk about guys firing everybody and replacing them with robots. You know, that's one way of looking at it using one set of terms, but a lot of other people look at it very, very differently. They say, okay, we don't need these employees anymore, but this guy has really great abilities in math, or he's a great inventor. He's really good. We put him in a lab and he's going to come up with something. Let's let him off the 40-hour grind. Let's let him have 6 or 7 months by himself in a lab. Let's see what he comes up with. I just think you're dealing simplistically and you're setting yourself up for a kind of apocalyptic, catastrophic conclusion by phrasing the problem as the wealthy against the poor, management against labor. I think we're defining ourselves into a corner there. And if you look back, admittedly, I don't have the Bucky Fuller's plan, or he's not the only one who said this. I don't have that at the tip of my tongue, but there are other visionary people who have looked at the problem a different way and come up with very, very good results. And I guess that would be my answer to what you said.
That's a reasonable answer.
And the other thing is this: if you look at the movement of the big power planets in the next 60 or 70 or 80 years, you're actually looking at a re-equilibration, a redistribution of money and political power, the way if the planets work the way they did before, when their forces are applied with this new arrangement, you're going to come up with a more equitable situation, so that you're probably going to end up coming up with a situation where the guy on the frontline employee will no longer, things will have changed, so they will no longer be in a position where they have to take orders, do a narrowly defined job. If that narrowly defined job disappears, well, they disappear. I think you're going to see a much more creative partnership develop between all of us, and I think we're going to stop seeing each other as rich and poor, black, white, oppressor and oppressed. I think these very polarizing terms, I just don't think they're going to be out there. And to some extent, I'm basing that on a somewhat cynical view of things. I think that we are very much the creature that the planets make us. If the planets, as they did in the last 40 years, if the planets are encouraging a top-down view of the way things work, well, over 40 years, you had everybody out there thinking in top-down terms. Eventually, everybody conceded. The left moved to the right. The guys who used to think bottom-up, well, after 40 years of being pounded by the planets saying, oh no, it's top-down, we're favoring top-down, everybody seeing that manifesting, everybody was converted to the total top-down thing. So if we now see the planets moving into an arrangement that supports a more equitable distribution of power and money, then you're going to see people eventually looking out at the world. This will be the experience they're observing. These will be the principles that govern the world. And little by little, they're going to say, hey, you know, maybe we should have a more equitable, we should have more reciprocity. We should have more mutuality. We don't have to be we don't have to go into this beggar thy neighbor, you know, a rat race, a dog eat dog kind of world. We can get into a more cooperative thing that involves a lot more reciprocity. Now, I'm not depending for this on human nature. I think it's an open question as to whether human nature could ever come to something like that, the way things have been working.
Right.
But I think that if you look at the planets and you look how people respond to these celestial influences, you can say that, well, when the planets were favoring the little guy reigned supreme. You had dictatorships of the people. It was a dictatorship, but they had to justify it by saying it was a dictatorship of the people. It was distorted, or you might even say it was perverted, but there was still this sense that it was they justified it by attributing all this to the people. Now, if you have my point there is simply that people really espouse in one form or another the structures that the planets engender in them, that the planets support. So if I look at these, the way the planets are moving and the way they did move in the 20th century, because I kind of looked at the movements in the 20th century more closely than prior centuries, and I say, okay, here are the planets talking top-down stuff, and all of a sudden everybody, all of us people are mouthing top-down things. Or you look earlier in the century and the planets were bottom-up, and so all of a sudden everybody is talking bottom-up. Now, my view, and it might seem kind of cynical, is the planets are talking, in the 21st century, the planets are going to be talking partnership, balance, reciprocity. And I think people are going to say, hey, let's have balance. Let's have reciprocity. Let's have partnerships. So you see what I'm saying there?
Yeah, that does make sense.
Okay, and that's kind of the way I see the whole 2012 thing. And I also think that you really want to remember that word increment. Even if, let's say, right now it looks like the little guy is regaining his power a tiny millimeter at a time. Every day they make 1 millimeter of progress, and it doesn't seem like they're going anywhere. But 10 or 15 years of a millimeter a day is going to get you pretty far. I run into that with astrology, with people who talk about astrology and historical cycles and historical process. They don't have a sense of the pacing. They think these things have to happen overnight. They also think in terms of extremes, of movement from one extreme to the other. So you have power on the left, and then you have power on the right, then the power goes back to the left, and you have these radical, revolutionary, overnight changes. And that has happened in the past, but it doesn't seem, let's say there are some places, some times in history, some situations where that happens. But if you look at what's going on now, things don't really seem to move that way. And I would also say that at one point, I think that the planets really engendered that kind of sudden overnight thing. And if you look at the planetary setup, you can see that the extremes of ideology were really reflected in the structure of the planets. Now, if you look at the way the planets are behaving now, they're not setting us up for radical overnight shifts. They're not setting us up for extremes. And I think I'm going to kind of let it go at that point and maybe see if you wanted to change the subject or where you wanted to go with this, because I don't want to.
Well, that does make sense. And it sounds like a transformation outside the swing of the pendulum. So
yes,
that's positive news. And we just don't know how that might look, because we're so used to seeing with the same set of eyes. So just knowing that that's how the planets are arranging things, we kind of almost have to trust that that is for our benefit, and then take our cues from, you know, our own inner guidance.
Well, you know what, I could introduce another concept here that I have never put this into anything I've written, because it would take me pages and pages and pages to get these ideas out there, and people's eyes would glaze over. But my feeling is that, let's put it this way, the planets are just exploring possibilities in sequence. It's like a symphony. They're just theme after theme after theme. You get one sort of theme, and that manifests. Now, if you have a human being, a fully developed, speak in terms of soul qualities, you have a human being who is manifesting a full array of balanced soul qualities. And so back in the 70s and 80s, when the pendulum, when the planetary pendulum was moving in favor of the 1%, and the dominoes were falling, and little by little, the oligarchs were coming out of the woodwork and going to try to take over. Well, I think if you had had a few people there who said, well, okay, I see this happening, but within myself or from what I've studied, we really shouldn't go in this direction. We should moderate them, so that if the planets are pushing us in an extreme direction, we should have that wholeness, that fullness of development within ourselves that says, hey, you know, the planets are engendering, they're fostering these attitudes, but wiser people know that just because we're feeling this way now, we can't really do that. You know, that's why they have constitutions and laws, because you can't get up every day and go with what you feel like. You've got to base things on experience. Now, what I envision are people who don't get up every day and go whichever way the planetary winds are blowing them. Now, I remember reading a long time ago in an astrology magazine, I think this will make it simple and easier for people to grasp the principle. Somebody said, okay, Neptune is going into your eighth house. Your eighth house has to do with the long-term finances and your financial thinking. It's going to make things complicated. It's going to make things deceptive. How do you deal with that? Well, if Neptune's going to make things complicated, you go with what's simple. You go with what's straightforward. You do the opposite of what Neptune is doing, is trying to get done. So you have to counterbalance what the planets are doing for you, are trying to get you to do. So if you have a strong Uranian influence and your nervous system is behaving like a big vat of popping corn, well, you're not just going to let that popcorn rhythm dominate your nervous system and become some kind of a crazy person always jumping all over the place. You're going to find it within yourself to channel these Uranian forces in a way that is rational, that is holistic, that is productive of something. You're not just going to all of a sudden become totally Uranian. You're going to blend these Uranian energies into other energies. Now, if you have a situation where the planets, as they did in the last third of the 20th century, that pushed us all into this top-down kind of thinking, what you needed to do at that point was say, well, you know, in some circumstances, in some parts of the company, or in some parts of, at certain points, at certain times, it's good to let the big guys with the money and the experience, it's good to let them have their say and have their way, but not all the time on every issue. So, in other words, we should have been pushing back. The 99% should have been pushing back from day one. Mm-hmm. And now, I'm not blaming people. I'm trying to get a principle here. If a principle articulated, if we had been more fully developed, if we had people with greater foresight and insight, greater strength of will, they would have said, you know, we're getting all these top-down things. I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We really ought to remember some of the things we learned during the bottom-up years. And so had we had the consciousness to balance or counterbalance what the planets were throwing at us, we never would have gotten such an extreme swing, an extreme redistribution of power as we did. The 99% would never have gained that kind of power. Now, I'm not saying that the little guy would have said, oh no, we're not going to let you do it. We're going to forcefully prevent you from doing it. Everybody, the little guys and the big guys, the rich guys and the poor guys, all of them were in a position to say, no, 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 let us counterbalance what the planets are throwing at us. The planets are throwing at us this top-down stuff. We're seeing top-down stuff everywhere. You don't have to be rich or poor to see the lack of wisdom in that. You just have to be able to see it from wherever you are. And so you would have had wealthier people, and you did see some wealthy people saying, well, you know, we really need to keep the middle class. We need to take care of the middle class because they're vital. Their contribution is vital, and if we exploit them, if we deprive them of resources, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. You've seen that. You see that, how can I put it? There are people in the 1% who believe that and who have said it right along. But if you had had somebody during the 70s and 80s and 90s singing that song, say, well, you know, let's not get carried away with this top-down stuff. Let's not get carried away with giving our power and our resources with the deregulation and all that, all of the stuff that characterized that era. So my point is that we don't want to be puppets of the planets. We don't want to get up and say, oh my God, there's this terrible Uranian vibe. It's driving me nuts. I need to calm down. I feel like I've had a gallon of black coffee. My nerves are a mess. If the planets are doing that to you, well, you don't want to turn the world into a world full of people with coffee nerves. You want to say, okay, guys, the planets, the aspects are really rough. They're really nerve-jangling today. Let us counter that. Let's play soothing music. Let's relax. Let's have some recreation. Let's counterbalance this nervous vibe. If people are feeling angry, resentful, you come out there and say, now, wait a minute. I know you're feeling angry. The planets, you've got this Mars-Pluto square. You want to chew nails and tear the heads off people and small animals. That's Mars-Pluto giving you a hard time. Don't give in to Mars-Pluto. You have to find within yourself a way of countering that Mars-Pluto energy. That same principle would apply in the political realm or the financial realm. You've got aspects that saying, oh, give all the money and the power to the rich guys because they know how to deal with it. You need the willpower to say, no, 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 no. Let us remember that the regular guys, the regular people, they have their place, they have their legitimacy and their value. So my point is that you can't just get up in the morning and go with what the planets are doing. There'd be nothing but chaos and warfare. And I think that a lot of times in history, people have given into the planets. They haven't looked within themselves and said, well, the planets are saying this, but my wisdom, my truth says, no, we shouldn't be doing that. And if we wait tomorrow, this planetary energy that makes us all crazy and wanting to do this crazy stuff, tomorrow those energies will be gone and we'll still have to keep leaving. I'll keep living. We'll have to repair the damage we did today. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
I didn't want to multiply examples, but so we have people, and it's our duty to say, all right, these are the energies that are coming from the planets. There's some wisdom behind it. There's some lesson to be learned. But then you say, but what is the best way to respond to these energies?
Right, right. Now, you also point out periodically that there will be relationship issues in the present.
Oh, my God.
Could you, because we haven't touched upon that, and I think that's something that people are interested.
People are very, very, very interested in that. Human beings are so into relationships. I mean, it's just to be human is to be into relationships. And if you talk to people, you know, they'll beat around the bush for a little while, make small talk, but eventually it always gets down to their relationship with this one person that they need to have or with their family. It all boils down to relationships. Now, what you're seeing, I think, this is something new, and it's a new kind of thinking, and I can't really phrase it quite as, how can I put it, authoritatively or clearly. I can't formulate it quite as clearly as I was able to formulate some of these other things. But we can kind of chip away at it and repeat something or maybe elaborate a little bit on what I said in the status that I posted on Facebook, that we have relationships, let's say, they're centered around the ego's preferences. They're centered around the not-self. They're centered around the personality. And the personality is formed by all of these relative, mundane, three-dimensional concepts. We're talking about sex appeal. We're talking about money, power, influence, forming alliances through marriage and otherwise, it will give us this, that, or the other advantage, or we'll be able to fulfill whatever our need or desire is at the time. Now, what the planet seemed to be asking us is that, well, you know, we know that there's this tight, hot bod that's just driving you crazy, you know, you just can't get your mind off it. But they're saying, you've done that. And you see where it gets you. It gets you crazy places. You know? So what they're saying is, what's your dharma? What are your higher principles? I suppose you could break it down into much more simple terms, you say, well, you know, right now it seems like the only thing you want is that girl or that guy, and that's the only thing that's going to do it for you. But what about tomorrow? What about when you have to pay the mortgage? What about when the kids start coming? Maybe you want to take a little more care about how you spend your time or who you develop the relationship with or how fast you make the relationship move, or even whether or not your relationship is going to be helpful to that other person. You might say, you know, this is a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing, but economically it's kind of a kamikaze sort of thing. You know, we're just, it's like you find a mate or you get an education. Well, the way it used to work in the old days, ideally, was you get an education, you prepare yourself to earn a living, then you find a mate that you would like to spend your life with, then you get married, then you get a job, then you get resources, then you start having the kids. And you did it in a sequence, because if you get educated first and then you find your mate and you develop a healthy, viable relationship and then you had the kids, you've built a foundation. Turn that around. So you say, oh, great, let's just have sex and have kids. You know, at first, if you do that first, that's going to get in the way of your education. It's going to get in the way of your relationship. You've got to kind of do these things in order. And if you do them in order well enough, you're going to be doing it with the advice of spiritual advisors, of wiser people. You're going to be taking all of these intangible, long-term concerns and making decisions based on that. Now, what I see happening is that people are once again going to see the wisdom of leading their life in some kind of reasonable order. Say, you know, I really, really, really want to have a girlfriend, or I want this relationship. It's all there is. It's driving me nuts. I need to have it. But somebody needs to say, well, okay, that's all well and good, but you also need an education. And you want to jam yourself into this particular field, but, you know, we need other kinds of people doing other kinds of things, and maybe you're just doing this because that's the fad. Maybe you're just doing it because your friends are doing it. So what the vibes that are coming up now, I think, are they're telling us to take a wiser, saner, more mature, deliberate, systematic approach to developing our relationship so that we do things in proper order. We don't have kids before we learn the skills we need to get the job to support the kids. We don't jump into a profession just because we need a buck. And let's say if you worked part-time and went to school and learned some skills, you would give yourself more freedom. But if you just want the money to buy the car and you're not going to wait, then you are short-circuiting. You're ignoring these deeper impulses. How can you become an artist? How could you become an inventor? How could you do this visionary astrology or astronomy or art or work on this invention if you just want to get a job so you can buy a car and what have you? So you see where I'm going with this.
Sounds like a similar balance is occurring in the relationship level as well, due to the planets, and I hate to have to cut off the conversation, but we're getting awfully close to the end. And before we have to go, I wanted you to mention something about the weekend before Christmas, and let people know where they can find you, and you know where they can read some of your work.
Well, of course, I'm posting on Facebook now, YouTube, and all these other things. That, you know, there's a lot more to getting stuff online than people realize, and I had to simplify. I suppose I'm preaching to the choir when I'm talking to you. You understand all that, but a lot of people don't realize that it just gets to be too spread out.
Yeah.
And so I had to really pull back and consolidate. Now, so I'm on Facebook. But every video, most of the videos I made in recent years are still available on YouTube if people wanted to go back to that. But they're My blog is still up if people wanted to go back to that. But basically, I'm working now on YouTube, and I'm looking for a new... I'm using Facebook and the Facebook formatting to develop a new voice, a new approach to astrology, a new way of doing it. So I pulled back in order to retool. You know, you can't retool when you're going full speed. You have to slow down.
Right.
And that's kind of what's going on with me in Facebook. And I'm also not quite as young as I used to be. So I don't want to lean on that too much. Okay, now, if we're going to talk about the weekend before Christmas, you notice the pattern we've been seeing for quite some months now, and I've been talking about it in my various astrology statuses, is that we have these little pockets of hard, pointy, difficult aspects floating around in a sea of kind of twinkly, pleasant aspects. And essentially, there are more pleasant aspects than there are difficult, hard, pointy, sharp ones. Things kind of even out more quickly than they used to. And what you have on the weekend before Christmas is something very much like that. You're going to have a little vortex of very difficult, confusing aspects. And I don't know, people might not know it. Technically, you've got a stationary Uranus. You've got the sun entering Capricorn. That's a solstice, right? You've got the solstice almost simultaneous with a stationary Uranus. And then you've got the next day, and you'll be feeling this along with what I just said. Yeah.
Well, Carl, we're almost out of time. So basically what you're saying is it's a turbulent and unpredictable week, the weekend before Christmas.
Right, but that things should moderate significantly. So if you find yourself stranded at an airport for Christmas, don't worry. The weekend, you know what I'm saying. If you find yourself stranded at an airport that day, give it a little time. It's going to ease up.
Well, Carl, I want to thank you for coming onto the show, and we'll have to do this again and find out more as the new year progresses. And just thank you for all that you do, and thank you for coming on tonight.
Well, thank you, Lance. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys.
All right.
Okay.
Wonderful. Well, good night, and good night, everybody.